yeah. Let's go. Hey, 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 yo. Come on. Hey, 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 yo.
Welcome, everyone, to the Fantastics Inside of Baseball podcast. I'm Lou Blasi, along with Brandon Cameron from Fantastics and InsiderBaseball.com. You might be finding us at InsiderBaseball.com on the blog or in the front landing page of InsiderBaseball.com, or you might be subscribing to us on one of your podcast services. It's a good idea to subscribe to us because we don't work in a very regular schedule here. We're doing a serious show, we're doing podcasts here, and it comes up rather irregularly, so you want to make sure you get there when an episode drops because it's usually topical information. This time of year, Brandon, things change quickly, so you want to make sure you get to the podcast pretty quickly after they dropped.
Yeah, I mean, we're in that kind of, now we're starting to get to that point where we're starting to really digest some of these numbers and develop some thoughts on them. Still very early, but this is an important time. This is when you start to really dive into to what you have in front of you and, you know, make your move.
Especially with pitchers, because the sample sizes are a little bit smaller and things can change drastically because of a good start or because of a bad start. I think it's interesting today here at Fantastics, we deal a lot with metrics and analytics, and we're dealing with expected slugging and expected batting average and expected ERA and all these fancy stats. And today we decided to go with K to walk ratio, which is one of the most basic stats there is. But it tells you a little bit about what we've been saying all spring long about the three pillars of pitching. And two of the three pillars of pitching are being able to strike out guys and limiting your walks.
Yeah, and I mean, it really puts into perspective kind of some of the other elements, you know. I mean, I was going through some of the list here and guys who, you know, strike guys out and aren't walking guys, and, you know, a couple of them give up a bunch of home runs. But, you know, we've said this over and over again, we're more okay with you giving up home runs if you're not walking anybody. And, you know, usually those are the, you know, those home run prone pitchers are much better if they're not walking anybody. And I just think going through the list, you know, it does put into perspective where some of these guys are at, some guys whose surface numbers don't look as good as we'd like them to look. But, you know, makes you feel a little bit better if they're still striking guys out and not walking anybody. So yeah, it's basic. It's maybe a little old school, but you know what? I still think you don't walk guys and you strike out a lot of guys, you're usually, you know, good things are bound to happen.
And it's funny you bring up the list, because that was my first impression when you dropped the list on me, because I've lost track of all the shows we do and where we said this and who I said this with. But we were talking about sometimes with statistics, you look at the leaderboard and the leaderboard makes sense to you or it doesn't based on the statistics. And oftentimes that's how we value the indicator stat and how accurate it is based on the kind of lists it generates. And this list of guys who are leading in strikeout to walk ratio is a pretty good list. Not everybody's performing. The result stats don't look great for everybody, but the underlying stats look good and the expected stats look good. This is a pretty good list of pitchers.
Yeah. I mean, this is the thing is, like, you know, we do have advanced metrics and we value them highly, obviously, at Fantastics, but, strikeout guys don't walk guys. I mean, that has never changed for, you know, what its value is. And you know, you put together a list of guys who are doing that and turns out to be oftentimes a really good list. And, you know, I do think at this point, you know, look, it's still a small sample size. And so, you know, you have one good start, you know, where you strike out 10 guys, it's going to stand out early in the season like this. Or, you know, if you had, you know, a couple starts where you didn't walk anybody, it's going to keep that walk, obviously that walk rate down and everything. So it is still a small sample size, but one thing it does tell me right now is, somewhat in this, it's not true, I would say across the list, but a little bit of a confidence level thing is, you know, typically if you're feeling good, if you're feeling confident, you're able to strike guys out and you're not walking guys. I mean, that's a confidence level thing. And so it gives you a little bit of insight. But again, yes, it is still a small sample size. You know, we're talking about typically four, maybe five starts with these guys so far. So put that into perspective, you know, and take it for what it is. This list will change, obviously, as the season goes on. If we look at this again in August, it's going to be a different list. But generally speaking, you know, early in April like this, this is a good list to look at and give you an idea of where these guys are at.
Yeah, and I want to emphasize again, when we're looking at an indicator stat, we're not saying the indicator stat is a silver bullet that tells us the whole story. What we use it for on this show, especially early in the season and on Sirius, is we're just looking for a list of players to talk about to break down. And this helps us cull a list of players that we might want to be interested in and might want to look in a little bit deeper. So we're not saying in this particular case, strikeout to walk ratio is the, again, the silver bullet that tells you exactly what the pitcher is doing and what you should base your future decisions on. It just leads us to players we want to break down. Here's the other thing I want to emphasize, Brandon, and I don't think we've seen it so far to the extent that I think we're going to see it. And we talked about this in spring training. I think the walks are extremely important and getting more important. I think there's going to be more and more emphasis on limiting walks. And a couple of guys on this list are already guys who control their walks very well, even coming into the season, but still are seeking another level in terms of not walking guys because the inflation in stolen bases. And I don't think we've seen the full effect of it yet because of weather and early season and things like that. I think as we get into the season, teams are going to put much more emphasis on limiting walks. I think the good metric teams, the good sabermetric teams and analytic teams already knew this. They discovered it last season. You can't put guys on base because there's a better chance they steal and they're in scoring position. You're not putting a guy on first base all the time. Sometimes you're putting him on second. And that just makes the job easier for the offense.
Yeah. And, you know, we're still in an era, you know, I think things have changed in the last 5 years, but guys are still hitting home runs. We still have, a lot of home runs compared to where baseball was a while back. And so
it's still the three true outcomes. I mean,
ultimately,
a little bit, but not as much as I think baseball wants. It's still a 3-2 outcome game.
Absolutely. And so, yeah, you want to limit walks, not only because, you know, guys oftentimes end up on second base, but also you got to limit base runners right now because guys still hit a lot of home runs. And so, like I said, there's a few guys on this list that give up a lot of home runs. And, you know, we've seen some great pitchers throughout baseball history that give up home runs, but they limit their walks almost always.
And again, this comes to the volatility of ERA, because if your pitcher is going only six innings and he gives up one run, that solo home run, that's an ERA. Two runs is a much higher ERA. And if you have that walk that you add to the home run, that one bad pitch that a pitcher is likely to make during the course of a start, that's two runs, changes the ERA equation considerably, turns the two-run homer into a three-run homer. That changes the ERA equation even further. That's what is making ERA so volatile and such a tough way to evaluate pitchers, because it's the difference of sequencing in terms of a walk and a home run paired together. You give up that one bad pitch in the second inning with nobody on, it's one run, no big deal. You give it up in the third inning with two guys on, and that's a three-run homer, and the way the game looks is totally different. It's just one pitch difference, but it's just a matter of the way it sequences. That's what makes ERA so volatile and unpredictable.
Yeah, and again, especially this early in the season, is it's also why you can't panic on some of these guys. There are some really, really good pitchers with some inflated ERAs right now in baseball, and you know it's why we do what we do. I still like to look into them, analyze what we're seeing, look into the advanced metrics and the stats. But you know, I'm not panicking over some of these guys. I mean, it's too early for that.
You have to make decisions on claims and cuts. You have to make decisions on streaming and starting for the week. If you're weekly transactions, the guys you're going to run out there right now, I haven't taken Jesus Luzardo's last two starts. It's not because I don't have faith in him. And yesterday was a pretty good start against the Mets. It's just, I want to see him straighten some things out. You do have to make some decisions, even if it's not a cut or claim decision. You still have to evaluate these guys for where they are.
Yeah, I mean, you have to do that. I think just some of the real stud pitchers, you know, who may be struggling in the early going, that's where if there's something standing out, I mean, if there's a velocity issue, if there's maybe a looming injury or something, yeah, of course we want to factor that in. But, you know, I mean, ERA is just so volatile that it can't be the stat that you rely on. And I understand it. It's easy to say that when a standard 5x5 league still uses it. So yeah. I understand it's still frustrating. Like if your guy has a high ERA, that's hurting your fantasy team. But, you know, that's already banked. I mean, that's already in your stats. You can't do anything about it. We got to move forward. We got to look ahead and see where these guys are going to end up. And, you know, for a lot of these really good pitchers, things are going to level out.
It's the most important stats are the ones that haven't happened yet. And that's what we're in the business of trying to determine. So you can look backwards at what they've done in ERA or look forward and what they likely might doing in ERA. And at this point in the season with starting pitching, I also want to put in this caveat, and we'll do it during the course of the show here with the starting pitchers we're going to talk about, that you have to start, you have to look at game logs. You have to consider opponents because it's such a small sample. There are some really bad teams out there. There are some really good offenses too. So you have to take into account who these guys have pitched against.
Yeah, and we've talked about this before. It's more stark this year than I think in most years. There are some horrible teams, and there are a few absolutely dominant offenses this year. So it's very split on either side. It's far on both sides.
All right, let's start with Jared Jones, one of the headline starting pitchers, young starting pitchers early in the season, 32 strikeouts to 2 walks. Can't ask for more than that. Here's the thing, though, with Jared Jones, basically a two-pitch pitcher. How can this continue? First of all, he's over-exceeding his expectations. He's pitching better in the majors than he pitched in the minors so far, and he basically is a two-pitch guy. What's your faith level that this can last to any degree?
Yeah, it really is pretty amazing, particularly because he didn't control his walks great in the minors.
Nope.
You know, it wasn't horrible, but it was closer to 10% walk rate in the minors. And, you know, right now at a 2% walk rate, and those 2 walks came in his first start. He hasn't walked anybody since. And he's faced a couple good offenses in his second and third start was against Baltimore and Philadelphia. And didn't walk anybody and struck out 15 guys combined between those two starts. So he has been incredible. Those numbers are just absolutely shocking, I would say. And, you know, I mean, this is for a guy who has a really, really good lively fastball. He has given up home runs. So this is one of those guys that we were talking about. He's given up home runs, but not real worried about it when you're limiting walks like that. But yes, going back to what you're saying, he's a two pitch pitcher, and he has like a curveball. He has a changeup, but he'll try to throw them in every now and then. He doesn't have confidence in them right now. And this is something that could certainly develop. So long term, you know, really excited about what Jared Jones can become. He's 22 years old. And I think eventually you got to develop those third, fourth pitches. And I think he will. Redraft leagues, if you have them right now, what to expect. Yeah, I just wonder, can it continue? But I also am impressed that we're now 4 starts in. He continues to limit those walks, and he continues to strike guys out. It's been impressive, but we talk about confidence. A lot of times if you're seeing this, he hasn't walked anybody since that first start.
Yep.
Shows an incredible amount of confidence for a 22-year-old rookie. But that being said, If batters start to get on to his fastball a little bit better, see his slider a little bit better, start to put a little bit, you know, better barrel on it and you know, hit the ball a little bit harder. Does that change? Does he start to nibble a little bit more and do those walks come back? Because like we said, you know, in the minors, he didn't limit walks this well. So it's just really been an incredible performance so far in his first 4 starts.
You bring up a great point, though, that we often look at this question as he's a two-pitch pitcher. When is the league going to catch up to him? That's hard to sustain. But by the same token, he's got a couple of pitches behind that, that there is a chance that he could develop those. He hasn't been in the minors or in the system long enough to say, well, they've had him for this long, and if he hasn't developed his curveball and hasn't developed his change, he's not going to. I still think there's low-hanging fruit in terms of his curveball and change, especially the changeup. And again, you know, I say this all the time, pitchers are stray dogs. They just find things, right? And someone's going to give him a grip. Someone's going to give him something, a hint that brings that changeup along. And the changeup is only 7 miles an hour down from his fastball to 90 mile an hour changeup. So it needs work. It needs development. All he has to do is add that. And maybe I'm delusional about this, but I've always thought adding and enhancing a changeup should be an easy fix for a major league pitcher and a major league development team. It's proven not to be true because not every pitcher develops a changeup, but I always wonder why they don't do it. There seems to be like some easy gains that he could gain on that change, and he just adds the change to that fastball slider combo. And by the way, the slider is 10 miles an hour down. So you're getting different entry points. You're getting different motion. You're getting a 10-mile-an-hour change. That makes those two pitches difficult. So it could go the other way in terms of he could develop something to adjust to the adjustment that the league makes to him. And you make another good point. He's four starts in. There's some tape out. So people know already.
Well, and the fact of the matter is, he's four starts in, and yes, our hitter's going to start to get a better feel for his fastball slider, yes, but he hasn't really needed to use the changeup and curveball. So maybe he does have a better feel for it than we know, and he just, he's getting his comfort level in the major leagues, and he hasn't had to go to anything else. Not to mention, if you kind of look a little bit deeper on his, page and everything and where his changeup and curveball are, he probably does have a little bit more trouble controlling them, which means, that could lead to more walks if he uses them, if he increases their percentage. And he is obviously focused on limiting walks right now. So again, this could be an intentional thing too, and it's possible as the season moves on, we start to see his changeup and curveball a little bit more, but he just hasn't had to do it. And his fastball slider have been fantastic. Right now, this is what we have. These are the numbers that we have. And look, overall, you can't complain with what he's done so far. I do really think long term, there's a lot to like about what he does.
And the one thing that we've had a little bit of a problem with is his home run rate that he's given up. His minor league stats show that he has an ability to control those as well. He's not a particularly huge fly ball guy. He controls quality of contact. He's not super skilled on quality contact, doesn't give up a lot of contact, actually. But I think I'm not worried about that home run rate right now because it's not part of his makeup either. And he's done everything better at the major league level than he's done at the minor league level. I think he's just suffered some really bad luck with that home run rate of 18.2%.
Yeah, two home runs in his second start, two home runs in his third start. He didn't give up a home run in his first or his most recent start. And that's also opponent-based. The four home runs he gave up were against Philadelphia, Baltimore. He didn't give up any home runs against the Mets or the Marlins. Philadelphia, Baltimore, two really good offenses, and they're going to hit home runs off of guys. And again, even if he does, continue to give up the occasional home run, it's just with his ability to strike guys out and his walk rate, I can live with it. I can live with giving up a couple home runs here and there.
Can I take the simultaneous positions of ride the hot hand? There's nothing you should do at this point. Just ride it while he's pitching well and keep going with it. And also explore the trade market. Chances are you didn't draft this guy. Chances are you have a pitching staff put together without him. I think he's simultaneously a sell high and ride the hot hand. I think both can be true.
Oh yeah. Well, if he's on your roster, you're playing him as long as he's on your roster. I mean, right now.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Unless we start to see some struggles or that walk rate comes up or something along those lines. But right now you can't not start him, right? At the same time, especially in redraft leagues, I would be exploring trades for sure. I don't think he can continue at this level. Those walks are going to come up. It's really great that he's been able to limit those, but I just don't see any reason or any, history to sustain that sort of walk level. So I think eventually the walks are going to come up. That's going to cause a little bit more volatility, especially if he does still give up some home runs. His star is bright right now. And so, certainly I think there would be a lot of people who'd like to get get Jared Jones into their lineups.
There's a lot here that doesn't seem sustainable. A 19.8% swing strike, 44.7% chase rate, 34.8 CSW. He's been great and he's missing bats. And it's just, unless there's some pedigree, Paul Skeens, if he came up and did this, you'd even question whether he could sustain this type of level of swing and miss, but it's going to come back to earth a little bit. It's going to regress a little bit, but ride the hot hand. Just ask around. If someone lost Spencer Strider right now, go talk to him.
Yeah.
See what he's willing to give up for. for this guy? Because again, he's surplus to you. You didn't draft him. I'm guessing he wasn't drafted in a lot of leagues. So you already have a pitching staff that you put together without him, and take your four starts, five starts, six starts, make your trade, and get, you can do both. Ride the hot hand and explore the trade market.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. And the thing of it is I understand for, I mean, this, we go into a whole trade discussion here, but you know, it's sometimes hard when you have a guy who's really been anchoring your staff and looking really good on your staff. It's hard to part with him, but you've got that, those stats, you've got those numbers. Yeah. If you're in a roto league, you've got it baked in. If you are in a head-to-head league, you know, he probably helped you in your first few weeks. And so
you get your column wins, they're in the bank. You're not trading those away.
Yeah, you've got it. And it's, you know, it's not to say I think he's going to be bad. You know, he's done some really impressive stuff, but you know, that walk rate, the strikeouts, they're going to level out a little bit more. I mean, it's 32-2 right now, 32 strikeouts to two walks. That's ridiculous. That's not going to continue.
Tanner Houck is an example of what we're talking about with the importance of walks, because about the only thing that's changed with Tanner Houck's performance, which has been excellent to this point, is all of a sudden the walks have disappeared basically.
Yeah. And, you know, again, early in the season, it's a small sample size. And sometimes you wonder, you know, how did that happen? Because, you know, you got a guy like Tanner Houck who's been inconsistent, to say the least, right, over the last several years, and has had a walk rate around 9% the last couple years. You know, again, not horrible, but it's certainly not something to write home about. And he's only allowed two walks so far in the early going. He's always had that strikeout upside. It's taken another level this early in the season, even though his swinging strike rate is actually down. And his chase rate is, you know, kind of level, but he's got some extra strikeouts. And yeah, I mean, overall, I mean, the numbers have been fantastic aside from, you know, one start where he gave up seven runs, four earned runs. That was his third start. I mean, he's just been fantastic. Now talk about in these early sample sizes, who did they play? And the first start was against Oakland, was fantastic. Well, pretty much everybody has a fantastic start against Oakland. Second start was against the Angels. He looked really, really good. But then the third start was right back against the Angels again. That's the one start that they tagged him a little bit. 12 hits he gave up in that one. And again, that was a back-to-back start against the Angels. And then against Cleveland, he was unbelievable earlier, you know, last week. You know, a complete game shutout with nine strikeouts. Three hits allowed, no walks. So, you know, it's a little bit of look at the opponents. Some of those numbers are boosted by the opponents he's faced. But you can't deny that, again, confidence level. Tanner Houck is confident right now, and, you know, he's dealt with some injuries too. He looks like his injury, you know, he looks healthy. And, you know, I mean, he's delivered great results so far.
And he's got that good balance. That's what allowed him to get that complete game in there. And that was an eyebrow raiser for me. It's like, what? Wait, what? Who's throwing complete games at this point? But if you're not walking guys and you're not striking out a ton of guys, those are some of the least efficient ways to go in terms of a pitch count and wearing a pitcher out and lasting long into games. If you're not walking guys, you're saving pitchers and you can get deeper into the games. And I think, again, that's another reason for the point of emphasis is I think teams want to get another out, another two outs, get into that sixth inning, six and a third, six and two thirds, hopefully with these pitchers. And one of the best ways you do that is controlling what you can control, which is your walk rate.
Yeah, I think, you know, and we've actually seen that in the early going is, you know, guys, pitchers have actually gone deeper than typical at this point in the season. We've already seen a couple complete games. We saw a Greg Maddux. Less than 100 pitches thrown in a complete game this week. You know, so that has been, you know, something that I think has been really important. And, you know, with all the injuries to pitchers, you know, if you can get pitchers deeper and preserve some arms, I think, you know, it certainly helps the roster management of these major league teams. And so those are really important, and limiting walks is really the key right now. But again, we were saying this with Jared Jones, is how likely is this to continue? I mean, these are different pitchers. There are some different factors involved, but it's hard for me to believe that Tanner Houck, who's never really been able to limit walks to this level, is going to continue to be able to limit walks to this level.
and he's doing it with a little bit of a change in deployment, and there's more off-speed stuff or breaking stuff. His fastball has been diminishing. He was 53% just 2 years ago, and it was 39% last year, 32% this year. Slider is up, and split finger fastball is up to 18.4 so far early this year, 11 the year before, 6 the year before that. So he's not throwing fastballs at this point, yet his control is getting better.
Yeah, his slider splitter combo are really good. And, you know, if he can continue to control them and command those pitches, you know, I think he can continue to, you know, rely less on his fastball. Not that he doesn't have a decent fastball, just doesn't have a ton of velocity, but it's nice, you know, got some nice sink to it. So he can get some ground balls on it, but man, he's got a really nice slider splitter. And again, another guy who, you know, he's been in the league now a few years, but he has, you know, dealt with injuries. He has, you know, kind of been a starter at some points, a reliever at other points.
Yeah, so he's been jerked around between the bullpen and starting rotation. So that's been a detriment for him. And he's gotten more, this is his second year now. He started all of last year. So he can throw the secondary stuff. He can keep hitters off balance. That's why you see the strikeout rates come up a little bit.
And he's still developing. You know, I mean, 27 years old, 4 years in the league, 5 years in the league. Yes, that's a while that he's been in the league. But again, because of the way things have gone for him, where he's moved around, has, you know, really hasn't thrown a ton of innings for a guy who's 5 years into the league. So he's still developing. And I think, you know, getting a chance to kind of have a sure role this year in the rotation, I think is probably a good thing. And, you know, I think the ability to rely on those two really, really good pitches, I think, you know, has helped him in the early going and could continue to help him.
When he spent most time in the bullpen, he was a fastball slider type of guy. The split finger was there, but he didn't use it much. As a starter, he uses it more. And this is one of these situations where I think that pitch is effective. It's already effective. It's going to get better, and he's going to use it. That's going to develop, and it's going to help him. It's going to help him with the strikeout rate, which is the last thing we needed for him. If he can control the walks to this degree, he already gets the ground ball rate down, so that helps him keeping the ball in the ballpark. But the strikeout rate just needed a little bit of a goose, and so far he's getting it so far this year. This is where we want him to sit with all of these rates.
Yeah, and ultimately it is that splitter that is really what's boosting the strikeout rate, because the splitter is his put-away pitch. He can use the slider, but, I mean, it's really the splitter that puts guys away. And so, you know, if he can continue to feel for that and command it, he's going to continue to strike guys out.
And he's fooling guys, because you look at that 11.8% swinging strike percentage and you're not particularly impressed by it. But you go look at the CSW and it's 32.6, which is elite level here. He's not getting a ton of chase. He's not getting a ton of swing and miss, but he's keeping hitters off balance, and he's getting that split finger is something that he's getting called strikes on it too.
Yeah, he's given up some hard contact. You know, so far he hasn't really given up home runs, only one home run, but probably he'll give up some more, as, again, he's faced weak offenses so far. So he's going to give up some home runs, but he is more of a ground ball pitcher, so it's not like he's going to give up a ton. But I think he'll give up some. But again, limit those walks and not worried at all about it. Really, you know, a guy probably people maybe were wary of because he's had this inconsistency, but man, he's really been good in the early going. And I do think there's room to continue this, not maybe to this level. Again, he's this 29-2 strikeout to walk at that. That's not going to continue to this level, but he does seem to be more comfortable in as a surefire starter.
Zach Eflin has been the reason why, and when we've talked about, when you and I and Skyler talked about over the last couple of years about striking out guys when you need to, limit your walks, keep the ball in the ballpark, and maybe the walk might be the most important part of this. And then when Anthony Perry came out with his three pillars of starting pitching this spring, where he back tested it and looked at the correlations, and it turns out the walk rate is the most important, correlates best to ERA among those three factors here. Zach Eflin is a prime example of this, because he doesn't strike out a ton of guys. He hasn't kept the ball in the ballpark particularly well this year. I mean, not great. He's fine, but not great. But what he's done is he doesn't walk anybody.
Yeah. And I mean, this has been Zach Eflin's, you know, key to his success throughout his career. His inability to limit walks. And I mean, he gave up a walk in each of his first two starts. Good offenses he faced, Toronto and Texas, has not walked anybody since. And, you know, he did the back-to-back Angels thing too, just like Tanner Houck.
Yep.
Didn't walk anybody in those. And then his most recent start was against the Yankees at Yankee Stadium. That was on Saturday. And man, fantastic start, six innings, six Ks, three hits, no walks. So he's actually even looked better recently in his last two starts. He hasn't walked anybody, 11 Ks, hasn't allowed a run in his last two starts. So a little bit of a bumpy start to the season, but it's been really strong since. And you know, you mentioned the home runs, three of those home runs, he's given up four home runs. Three of them came in the first start.
Right.
So he's only given up one home run in his last four starts. So, you know, just a lot that has looked really good for him. You know, really, again, since those first couple starts. But this is Eflin's game. I mean, Eflin has throughout his career limited walks, and it's gotten better in the last, say, 4 years. His walks have really taken a dip. Yeah, he's not going to strike out a ton of guys. He gets his share every now and then. But his game is limiting walks. He generally keeps the ball mostly on the ground, not a huge ground ball rate, but you know, that's where he tends to get the batted balls. And, you know, I mean, it's worked for him throughout his career, and it's working in the early going this year.
Yeah. The ground ball rate is enough to keep the barrel rate down, so they're not teeing up on him a little bit. So when we look at this 7.9 K per nine and the 1.23 K per homers per nine, we can discount that a small sample, or you got to look a little bit deeper because a lot of the home run damage came in the first start. His strikeout rate has picked up recently. He gets back to what we were looking at last year in 2023 with striking out 9.4 per nine and walking 1.2 per nine and less than a homer per nine on that. It's exactly where we want him to be. That's the formula right there.
Yeah, and you know, Eflin has a really, really deep arsenal, and the good thing about it is he's able to command all of his pitches, and he really has four or five pitches, and he can command them all, and the good thing about that is when we are early in the season like this, you know, kind of in contrast to Jared Jones that we talked about, is, you know, Eflin can continue to play with this deployment a little bit, you know, right. I mean, in the early going, it is a little bit more of his fastball than he typically would use. And you know, some of that can be, and I don't know, I mean, I'd be interested in chatting with Zach Eflin about it, but some of it could be because it's April, because the weather is usually not as good in April, is, you know, guys aren't going to be able to tee up his fastball quite as well, put as much of a barrel on it. But as the season goes on, he can go to some of the softer stuff. He's got a really, like, you know, slow moving curveball, sweeper that he's now got in there. So, you know, he can kind of pull in some of those off speed, breaking pitches a little bit more. And so, you know, this is a veteran pitcher now who has done it, you know, for years, and looked really good in his first year in Tampa Bay last year, and looks like he's able to follow that up this year, at least in the early going.
Yeah, and I'd be a little leery of that deployment at this point in a small sample because he was facing the same team twice in a row and two starts in a row. So he's going to hold back a little bit, or he's going to have a game plan to go one approach in the first start. Didn't go all that well for him in the first start, right. But he came back in the second start with a different approach and, you know, had 6.1 shutout innings against a team he gave up five runs in five innings against.
Yeah. And that was the back-to-back against the Angels, you know, April 8th on the road, April 15th at home. And yeah, I mean, and the deployment did change, obviously, as you'd expect, from when he actually wasn't using his fastball in the first start. Now again, you know, that was in Anaheim. And then he came back and used his fastball a lot more in that second start. It was kind of a little bit more, you know, fastball slider sort of a deal. And, it worked out really well. That second start was great. And then really impressive, his most recent start against the Yankees.
Yeah. And this is the kind of guy who drives us nuts, right? Because you got three starts that are excellent here. You got two starts that aren't so good. You can write off the first start of the year if you want to pretty easily, but that Anaheim starting there, and then he comes back and throws 12 scoreless innings, 12.1 scoreless innings against the Angels, a team that just hit him for five, and against the Yankees, which is a pretty good offense.
Yeah, and I mean, I would imagine there's some people who set their, you know, weekly lineups if they've got weekly lineups, and maybe benched him against the Yankees. I get that. I mean, I don't know. What were you going to say?
No, yeah, I get that totally.
It depends on who else you got and what your roster looks like, how deep your league is. There's some where probably, you know, deeper leagues, Eflin's an automatic start regardless of who he's playing. But that's the tough thing. I mean, it's early, you know. Don't beat yourself up if you did that. Don't beat yourself up if you started him against Toronto and the Angels. That's understandable. You know, it's early, and you know, I think you just. I always, you know, at this point in the season is when I start to get a better feel for when I want to, you know, somewhat streaming pitchers. And I wouldn't call Eflin a streaming pitcher, but you know what I mean? Like when you're making those roster decisions, I struggle always in the early going. I make mistakes and start guys when they get beat up and bench guys when they, you know, are lights out. And it takes me about almost a month, maybe 3-4 weeks to get comfortable with who I want to start when, but you're going to make mistakes throughout the season. Especially if you have weekly lineup decisions, you know, I mean, that's just part of it. You're going to make mistakes. Don't beat yourself up over it.
I get recency bias still, even though I talk myself out of it all the time. And we all talk each other out of it all the time here in yearly going. Like I said, I haven't taken Jesus Cesado's last two starts because it's just been too tough. It's like, nope, I'm not going to do it. I didn't particularly need him. I'm in a head-to-head categories. In the house league, so I didn't need him in those particular weeks. So there are other factors involved other than just whether I should start him or not. But by the same token, it's just like, no, he's a good pitcher, but it hasn't been good lately. I'm just going to sit this one out.
Well, I mean, and, you know, I don't know if there's anybody who would have benched Luis Castillo at Colorado. Yeah. And he threw 7 shutout innings, 9 Ks. Luis Castillo, who's been, you know, not great in the early going, but then he just absolutely dominates Colorado. And I'm kind of going off on a tangent. I normally, you know, you're gonna bench any guy who's a borderline pitcher at Colorado. This year, with how bad the Rockies are, even in Colorado,
yeah,
I'm not too worried about it.
It really depends. Like for me, a lot of it depends on circumstances around the start, but in a rotisserie format, no, you can go into Colorado and start a good starter. I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah. But, you know, I wonder if there's anybody out there. I have Castillo in a couple leagues and I fortunately started him, but, I understand it. Like, you know, he was struggling in the early going, but this is one of those things where it's like, it's Luis Castillo. Start him. Don't, you know, too early to worry about, you know, an inflated ERA or anything like that. Just start him. And he's looked much better in his last couple starts, and I think he's going to be fine.
All right, lots of good things in Joe Ryan's start to this point. His strikeout rate is up. His walk rate is down. His home run rate is down. His ground ball rate is up. Career high on the ground ball rate. Lots of good things to look into here so far for Joe Ryan.
Yeah, and he's developing kind of, you know, in the way we want him to. You know, he's always been a guy who's been able to limit walks. And I think, you know, in the early going this season, it's again been really impressive. Only 3 walks. He struck out 30. Like you said, I mean, the strikeouts have really come on over the last few years. As I think he gets better and gets more comfortable, he's got a little more velocity now on his fastball. He's limiting hard contact. So while he's, you know, given up, you know, he's more of a fly ball pitcher, so he's going to give up some home runs. His ability to limit hard contact in the early going is really good. Again, looking at his 4 starts, looking at his opponents, he had a back-to-back as well. In his most recent 2 starts, faced Detroit in Detroit, a couple starts ago, and was phenomenal. Gave up or struck out 12 in 6 innings. Came back, had to face the Tigers again, and it wasn't as strong. He allowed 4 runs in 5 1/3. That was a, you know, second of a back to back. But overall, the strikeouts have been really impressive. He hasn't walked more than a batter in any of his starts. So 3 of his 4 starts, he's allowed 1 walk, and you know, the numbers don't jump off the page in terms of ERA in the early going. Part of it, that four runs allowed against Detroit, but really like to see the continued command and limiting of walks with an increase in strikeouts. It's like he's just getting better. And again, worth noting that his four-seam fastball, which is the pitch he relies on more than any other pitch, is up about a mile per hour in velocity. So that's notable in the early going here.
Well, that got a 10-mile-an-hour delta between that and his slider, which helps out there as well. But the split finger fastball has been the thing for me, because you mentioned it. He's been susceptible to homers, even last year when he increased the use on that split finger fastball. But we've seen the ground ball rate come up from 27-28% in his first couple seasons. Split finger came in last year and it goes to 31.6%. It's at 41.4 now. If he's just getting better and more comfortable with that split finger, again, it just gives hitters something else to think about, which is always a plus. And it just keeps hitters a little bit off balance. That might be helping both the strikeout rate and the home run rate.
Yeah, he's going to strike some guys out with the split finger fastball, but it's also worth noting, I mentioned his quality of contact. Like he's given up in, he's allowing 87.3 average mile per hour average exit velocity. That's really good. And it's down significantly from where it was last year. The bulk of the hard contact is against that splitter. And that's on the ground.
Right.
I mean, those are ground balls. So, again, we talk about his ability, if he can limit home runs, considering he's a fly ball pitcher, been around 50% the last couple of years. So he's going to give up fly balls. And you'd say, oh, that means he's going to give up a lot of home runs. And he will give up some home runs. But the bulk of the hard contact is on the ground. When his other pitches, which are the ones he's going to give up a lot of fly balls, like that four-seamer, the slider, those he gives up really weak contact, at least in the early going this year, really weak contact. And so, you know, it's just going to be more, you know, theoretically, you know, pop flies and balls that aren't hit particularly hard and able to get out of the ballpark. So, you know, it is notable to me that right now, really the hard contact that he is giving up is mostly on the ground.
Yep. Yeah. And that's one of the things we don't, when we look at hard hit, when we look at quality of contact, we can see the numbers and we see, you know, may not be exactly what we're looking for, but a lot of times, and you brought this up on a couple of occasions, I love that you look into it, is that the hard contact on the ground is where you want the hard contact to be. We kind of have to split it up. We can't look at it as a group all that often to figure out what's going on. Just that increase in the ground ball rate, you said the fly ball rate, it's down from 54% just 2 years ago to 43% so far this year. Small sample, but he's making progress, and that's exactly what we want to see, because home runs have been a problem for him. He's never really walked a ton of guys, and he can strike out some guys. It's been the home run. So if that split finger helps control that and helps to goose his strikeouts a little bit, double plus there.
Yeah. And, you know, right now his BABIP is up 333. I mean, there's been a 278 career BABIP guy. Now, some of that, I do think there's, again, this goes off of the conversation we were just having, you know, giving up hard contact on the ground, that BABIP is going to go up a little bit, and more ground balls in general, you're probably going to give up, you know, a few more base hits, but, and that's been, you know, kind of what's happened in the early going. He has given up base hits. But at the end of the day, you know, his ability to strike guys out, his ability to limit walks, it's really going to lead to good things. I mean, if he can continue to do this, and there's no reason to believe he can't continue to limit walks, that's something he's always done.
Yep.
If the strikeouts can remain this high, I mean, you know, we're talking about that next step that some people are waiting for Joe Ryan to take, and, coming off, you know, maybe a subpar season based on expectations with a high ERA. It's looking really good in the early going here.
Expected ERA is 2.17, which gives you an idea of what he's doing in the overall game. And a lot of that, in, especially here in small samples, just sequencing, right? So he's doing all the things he needs to do to pitch well, and it's going to come. It's going to come even a little. He's pitched well to this point, but those results, stats, numbers are going to get better as we go along. At least that's,
I think so.
That's where all the indicators are pointing. Same is true for George Kirby, by the way, who's one of these guys on this list. He's doing things he's doing things well. The results haven't been there, but that doesn't mean you should give up on him.
No, and kind of that's one of the guys I was referring to in the early going. If you got one of these guys who was, you know, one of the first pitchers selected, he's probably, you know, one of your top two starters in most leagues. And, you know, I get the frustration. He's got a 6.64 ERA. There are a lot of things that are red flags in terms of the fact that he's had some bad luck. One thing has not changed. He does not walk anybody. I mean, his ability to limit walks is incredible. And if you remember, he gave up two walks right off the bat against the Red Sox in his first start. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And actually, that was a really good start. So the one start that he gave up walks has been a really good start. He hasn't walked anybody since. You know, we even said this before the season. His strikeout upside isn't like some of the other guys, you know, drafted around him. So he hasn't struck out a ton of guys, but he just doesn't walk anybody. And then we look at the luck stats and what is contributing to this really high ERA. I mean, he's got a 51.6% left on base percentage.
Right. Yep.
You know, you've 75% each of the last 2 years. So that will regress back to closer to that number. His BABIP is really high, 354. That should regress as well. And we are seeing some early differences in the early going in terms of he's given up more fly balls, fewer ground balls. He's been mostly a ground ball pitcher, but this year in the early going, it hasn't been the case. There have been a few other little things here and there, but generally speaking, he's still the same guy with just some really bad luck in the early going. And this is one horrible start that stands out in that ERA. Now he gave up 8 runs in 3 2/3 in his second start against Cleveland. Obviously that's just killing his ERA. He wasn't good his next time out either, though. Gave up 5 runs against Toronto. But really it's that second start that just bloats that ERA so badly. 2 of his 4 starts have been really good against Cincinnati and Boston.
All I can think right here, and we talked about it so much in the preseason, because that 8 extra runs that he gave up against Cleveland, that's going to raise his ERA maybe close to 0.5 run by the time we get through the end of the year. All that makes me think is sale price next year. Just sale price next year, because that ERA is not going to recover from those 8 runs he gave up in that start. That's just one of those things. And that's what makes, again, ERA so volatile. Stop using it as a gauge for pitchers. I know we have to use it because it's a result stat, but stop using it to gauge the worth of a pitcher, because his ERA is going to be a little bit inflated into the offseason because of that one start. He's probably going to pitch very well the rest of the way. I mean, he got beat up against Toronto a little bit too, but for the most part, that one start is going to give you a sale price. It's going to be worth 2 rounds next year.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's definitely true. And, you know, it's going to, remember, people are going to forget.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to end up having a good season. And then people are going to forget he had a rough April, you know? And I mean, it's just kind of the way it is. And he did, he had a rough April. And so, you know, I said this too, is like, the Mariners defense is not very good.
Right.
And I haven't watched every George Kirby start to legitimately say this, but I would think some of those base hits that have gotten through, if he was with some other defenses, wouldn't have been able to. So I just think that again goes back to this high BABIP, low left on base percentage. Things are going to even out here. And he's not losing confidence and starting to walk guys.
No, nope. He's doing what you want him to do. He's doing what he always does. The results, just the sequencing hasn't been ideal. And this is why we pound on it all during the preseason. You can't take season long stats and just sit there, especially with George Kluber is going to be a perfect example. You got to split out April. I mean, you don't have to split out. You don't have to discount it and say, you just write it off, but you have to say, okay, well, that's why the ERA was a little bit higher than I expected it to be. That's why it was a disappointing year, because he had 2 bad starts in April. I'm guessing that's the story we're going to be telling this winter.
Yeah, no, I think we're going to bring it up a bunch, and and we'll see. We'll see where he's being drafted next year. But, you know, going back to what you were saying about what Anthony put together, and you can find it on the blog, about the importance of walks and the correlation to ERA is, I mean, George Kirby doesn't walk guys. He's never walked guys. That was clear early in his minor league career. It's been evident in his 3 major league seasons. He doesn't walk guys. And, you know, I mean, that's just really going to be something that carries him, I think, throughout his career.
And that's why we don't write off guys with less than thrilling K rates, right? Especially if they can control zone and limit walks like George Kirby does. It's okay to take a guy like George Kirby, even if he doesn't strike out a ton of guys. All he needs to do, and this is the definition I always say, be able to strike out a guy when you need to, and he can do that. He's got a reasonable strikeout rate, not a sexy strikeout rate, but it's okay if he's walking guys at the rate he's walking and he's keeping the ball in the ballpark like he normally does.
And he threw 190 innings last year by not walking anybody. He's going to be able to throw a bunch of innings as long as he stays healthy. And so that is a key factor as well. So yeah, his K per nine isn't that good, but he struck out 172 guys last year. You know, there's guys who have much better K per nines, but they only throw 150 innings. And so they end up with the same amount of strikeouts as George Kirby.
Yeah, so I think exhibit B on this whole walk emphasis, one is the stolen base inflation, and the other is, I think, because teams, the way the rosters are set up now, the way the rules are now, just are burning through their bullpens. They're burning through. They need their starters to get into the sixth inning. And one way to do that is to be more efficient with your pitches, which is pitching to contact a little bit more. I know it's a phrase that everyone just kind of winces at. And maybe we can call it something else so it doesn't have that bad connotation. But you don't have to strike out everybody and don't walk anybody, and you're going to be more efficient. And maybe you can get that out in the sixth, that two outs in the sixth that just helps your bullpen so much.
You know, I was watching a game on Saturday, and a general manager was like up with the announcers kind of having a mid-game interview. And they asked him, you know, what's the thing that keeps you up at night? What's the most important thing for you as a general manager? And he said, it's making sure we have enough pitching.
Yep.
You know, every day you're looking at who is available to pitch and how much depth do we have and who's at AAA who can come up if we need it. And I think this day and age, that is really what general managers are doing more than almost anything, is working on building that pitching depth.
We are going to have depth from a roster standpoint, and it's going to be soon. I'm guessing in the next year or two where there's an extra roster spot for an extra bullpen guy. Bullpens are just getting burnt out too much. There's too much shuffling between the minors and the majors for players. I think eventually teams are going to protest enough and lobby enough to get that extra roster spot, maybe two, to keep that bullpen fresh, because teams are just burning through their bullpens. It's just the way it's going.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, kind of sending guys back and forth. I mean, we've seen a couple instances already this year where a pitcher's come up, looked fantastic, and immediately been sent down because they're just having to play, like these general managers are just playing the game of making sure they have fresh arms.
Yeah, I had two bad starts. My bullpen's burnt. I need a guy to make a start, or I need a guy in the bullpen.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's changed. The game's changed a lot. So guys like George Kirby, though, really can provide a lot of comfort to, you know, his general manager, because he's going to be able to throw a lot of innings.
Okay, this is patting ourselves on the back probably a little bit too much, but I'm going to do it anyway. Has Freddie Peralta found a second gear, and is it because he's limiting his walks? Is it that simple?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously this is a different Freddie Peralta, and, you know, he's cut his walks in half basically from where he was earlier in his career, while, you know, striking more guys out. I think there is some correlation there. Hitters could be more patient on him earlier, you know, in his career, and now you can't. He's always done a great job limiting quality of contact. And he's continuing to do it this year. But yeah, I mean, something's changed, I think, with Freddie Peralta's confidence. I think he was always kind of an afterthought, you know, in the Corbin Burns, Brandon Woodruff, you know, Brewers days. I think the fact that he is really their ace now has really changed his confidence level. Yes, he's developed. He's gotten more, you know, comfortable with his pitches. But I think also, you know, he has really just shown a lot of confidence. And this is the guy who really only was a two-pitch pitcher earlier in his career. I mean, you can make the argument he was really a one-pitch pitcher. It was his fastball, and that was it. He was throwing his fastball like 80% of the time early in his career. Now he's throwing it 54% of the time this year. He still doesn't have a deep arsenal, but I think his comfort level with his secondary pitches has been a difference maker for him, and the fact that he's throwing them for strikes. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it was a fastball guy, and then it was the curveball early in his career, changeup to try and, you know, get strikeouts or get swings and misses. Now he's throwing, you know, slider, changeup. He's throwing them for strikes and able to get weak contact on them as well and get called strikes on them. And so I think his confidence level's on full display. We talk about, like, what do we read from this stuff early in the season? For a guy like Freddie Peralta, who's really made that development change throughout his career, still only 27 years old. But, you know, I do think it's a confidence level, and it's really impressive in the early going.
Yeah, that's interesting, because the question, that's a great point that I hadn't thought of. I love it, because this is one thing we can't measure. We can't measure what's going on in a guy's head oftentimes. And the fact that he's got the lead role in the starting rotation right now may be playing into this to a large degree. And what we're always asking questions is, when a guy walks as many guys as Freddie Peralta has walked in the past, although he's improved over the last couple of years, we always ask, is it mechanical issues? Can he not throw strikes, or does he not want to throw strikes? In other words, is it fear or is it mechanics? And that's often hard to establish. At this point, though, he never should have been fearful, because he misses bats. He can beat hitters. But now that he's got a little bit deeper repertoire, that might be helping him feel a little bit more confident, especially with those secondary pitches, where he's going to nibble with that secondary pitch, and now he's going in the zone with it because he has some confidence. Maybe it's just taking the role of the leader in the starting rotation. All this could be combining together. It's fascinating, but it really it's starting to feel like Peralta has grabbed another gear here this year.
And, you know, that if he can continue to limit walks like this, that should mean a career high in innings, obviously, stay healthy. Mm-hmm. But last year, he made 30 starts and threw 165 innings. He should very much surpass that this year with his ability to limit walks and just the fact that he's been so good. And I think from a fantasy perspective, he's a must start, right? I mean, his best start this season was at Baltimore. The toughest opponent he's faced by far. And he was phenomenal. 6 innings, 11 Ks, no walks, 1 run allowed. And so I think he's a must start. I think he's matchup proof at this point. And I think, yeah, you could get a lot of innings out of him too, which is, you know, probably a minor benefit, but something that may have been overlooked, considering this is a guy who has never pitched more than 165 innings.
Well, we'll see if these gains hold up, but he's a legitimate number one now, where he wasn't in the draft. He wasn't coming out of the draft. He wasn't a legitimate number one. He was a very good pitcher, but he wasn't a legitimate number one. And he wasn't start every day, every start, take all 30 or 32 starts. He was a guy that, you know, you might not take all the time, but now he's pitching like a legitimate number one right now. And everything indicates he may be able to sustain this.
Yeah. I mean, he's definitely pitching like a number one, and, you know, even if there's a little bit of volatility with the walks, or there, you know, he walked 2 in his most recent start. Every now and then, if he does that, yeah, you know, that's okay. The strikeouts are up. The confidence is high. I think he's in a really good place. And, 27 years old, how many career innings, just over 600 career innings. This is the development you want to see. And it's looking really good.
But two seasons with 100 plus innings pitched, 165 last year, 144 in 2021. And so you're right, this helps that number one status even more. If he can throw 170, 175 innings pitched this year, get to 180 at this level, he enters the draft next year as a legitimate number one, maybe on that second tier. They're going to be the elite guys, but he may be a second tier starting pitcher next year.
Well, that's 200 plus strikeouts. If he can get 180 innings, that's 200 plus strikeouts. And I mean, that's elite. That's among the best. And I just think of what the perception was. Freddie Peralta earlier in his career was all he had was his fastball.
Right.
And he didn't have confidence in his secondary pitches, which is why he walked guys. And now he's got these better secondary pitches where he has more confidence. He can throw them for strikes. He can nibble a little bit with them. And he's taken another, you know, step. He's looked really, really good, man. The Brewers have him so cheap. He signed a 5-year, $15 million contract in 2020.
It's unbelievable. So he's at
$3 million this year.
He's going to be a bargain. He's going to be a bargain.
Yeah, it's really impressive.
That's us in this episode. Check out insideofbaseball.com if you're not familiar with us, and check out the baseball blog, free to non-subscribers, more of these podcasts and daily player analysis. You get a sample of some of the emails that we send out to our subscribers with dozens of player notes in there, but you get four or five of the player notes of the day, all useful material. Again, free to non-subscribers. The podcast is free to non-subscribers. Go check that out. Check us out on SiriusXM as well. And we'll see you next time at InsideOfBaseball.com. Let's go.